Hi, everybody. I'm Rick Sanchez. I've been doing news now for 30 years in two languages all over the world and here in the United States, and I've interviewed four presidents and founded a billion-dollar business. And you know what I think? I think news should be honest and direct and impactful, which is why we call this Direct Impact. It may be unintended consequences. It may be a backfire, or it may be, as it's infamously referred to by the CIA, you've heard this term, right? Blowback. Call it whatever you want. But there's something happening right now with China, which is no doubt directly related to our government's actions. That's right. And the pattern goes something like this. The more that the United States disses China, the more that China wants to assert itself globally. It began with Xi hammering out a truce between two countries that have publicly hated each other, despised each other now for more than 7 years. This feud between Iran and Saudi Arabia is rooted in doctrine, in history, in religious differentiation, proxy wars that have dominated the Middle East headlines. But suddenly, in steps President Xi, who seemed to shock the global community by getting Tehran and Riyadh to sign an agreement reestablishing diplomatic relations between the two.
Iran's foreign minister had described the meeting with his Saudi counterpart as positive and emphasized that stability and sustainable security and their common agenda were among the issues agreed upon. The two sides will also study the prospects of resuming flights between the nations while facilitating the visa process for their citizens.
And no sooner than that deal was inked, it was on to another meeting. This is the president of China. Another meeting, another attempt at peacemaking, this time looking for a solution to the conflict between Ukraine and Russia. So after establishing what appears to be an amicable relationship, Mr. Xi presents President Putin with China's 12-point plan to end the conflict, which calls for dialogue, respect for both countries' territorial sovereignty, an end to economic sanctions. He also urges both parties to avoid nuclear escalation. And that, by the way, did not seem like a major point or a relevant point when the plan was first presented. But then this happened. Did you hear about this? The UK announces that it would send tanks to Ukraine containing depleted uranium, which seemed to enrage Russia, who are saying the shells contain enough radiation to make dirty bombs. So as for the Xi plan, in and of itself, here's how Mr. Putin responded.
Мы ознакомились с вашими предложениями по урегулированию острого кризиса в Украине. Конечно, у нас будет возможность обсудить этот вопрос. Знаем, что вы исходите из принципов справедливости и соблюдения основополагающих положений международного права, неделимой безопасности для всех сторон. Вы также в курсе, что мы всегда открыты для переговорного процесса.
Joining us now is journalist Marco Fernandez. Marco, thanks so much for joining. I guess we have to start with the Iran and Saudi Arabia agreement. This is historic. I mean, this seemed to come out of nowhere. All countries, China, stepping in and settling this thing, the evil communists, hell-bent on world domination, as they've often been referred to. What's your reaction? How did this happen, and why China?
Okay, Rick, that was a mind-blowing agreement nobody was expecting. And I want to excuse to tell a little story, 1 minute. So a few weeks ago, I live in Beijing, so I had to go to Shanghai to shoot a TV show there. So I went to the airport in the morning, and I got a plane, airplane to Shanghai. So I sit by the window and look at to my side in the runway, and I saw an airplane, official airplane of the Islamic Republic of Iran. And I saw this, wow, but what's going on? I didn't hear about any delegation, Iranian delegation in China. I mean, follow the news every day. And President Raisi just had been in Beijing like a couple of weeks ago. So why is this airplane? It's like, okay, I don't know. I have no idea. So I go to Shanghai, shoot the show, end of the day, go chill out, go to have a drink in a bar and with my cell phone, suddenly there's a break news. Historic agreement between Saudi Arabia and Iran after 7 years of broken relationship. I was like, shoot, that was why the airplane was there. My God. I mean, they were in Beijing for 4 days, 5 days. Nobody knew about it. Why I'm telling this, first of all, because I think this story tells a little bit about how Chinese diplomacy works. Why countries, more and more countries, can trust China? Because they are a reliable partner. I mean, imagine if like two high status delegation of Saudi Arabia and Iran in a country, in another country, for 5 days and nobody knew about it. It's very hard to happen. But in China, they have a way to say, okay, this is top secret. Let's discuss behind the scenes and then we come out publicly. So this is the first thing. But I would say also, that is a way of Chinese diplomacy that is being, like, I think, more and more appealing to the whole world, which is a different way of doing international relations. First of all, it's dialogue, consultation, consensus. You know that Chinese culture is very much based in consensus. It's the culture. It's like daily life. So I think this express in Chinese diplomacy. But also, of course, there's economic interests. Of course, I mean, China is the largest buyer of almost everything, almost every commodity in the world right now. Saudi Arabia is the second largest exporter of oil to China. Iran, I mean, China has a huge agreement with Iran a couple of years ago. They say like maybe $400 billion in 25 years, Iran's providing oil and gas to China. China is providing technology, infrastructure, 5G, subways, trains, etc. So, of course, I mean, the three of them together have, and of course, China is in the middle, they have huge economic interests. So what is the best for them? Is to, okay, let's keep fighting wars. Let's keep hate each other and we don't talk to each other and we fund other, I don't know, militias against each other. I mean, guys, let's sit and talk like adults and let's make business. Of course, it's about business, but it's about like a different a path for development for the countries. So I think more and more countries, especially in the global south, look into China and say, okay, we can deal with these guys. They're not coming here, invading our country, killing thousands, hundreds of thousands of people, devastating countries in few years. Or after that, they just, I don't know, they just sanction us, choke our economies. This is not the way that China thinks that should behave with other countries. So I think this is, I mean, it's almost common sense, right? But I think this is the kind of common sense that US missed long time ago.
Why do you think, by the way, Marcos, that they did it now? Are they trying to send a message to the United States, to the West?
I think it turns into a message, of course. But I don't think this is the Chinese are like sitting here thinking, okay, let's send messages to the U.S. No, I mean, let's propose something different from the world to the world, which is not wars. Let's not destroy countries. Let's respect countries. Let's respect other cultures. So in this sense, it is a message. But as I said again, this is also economic interest. This is diplomatic interests, and at the end of the day, I think. also the countries of the global south more and more realizing that if we are divided among ourselves, we're going to be weaker to deal with the Western powers. So guys, let's sit and talk. Because at the end of the day, we global south, we people of color, we are 80% of the population in the world. And actually, we represent in the last years 70% of the growth of the global GDP growth. So the dynamics of the economy is shifting from the global north to the global south. So why should we be divided, fighting each other? Why shouldn't we not unite and go to G20, IMF, United Nations with a stronger voice to deal with these guys, our former colonizers?
China says that the United States' antagonism toward them is the reason that they're, you know, establishing themselves, as we spoke about a little while ago, globally. Do you think that's true? Do you think this is causing China's emergence or desire to assert itself globally?
That's a good question, Rick. I think I would say, first of all, I think take the example of China and Russia. Both China and Russia, in the last decades, many sectors of society developed deep relations with the United States, economically, even like culturally. So these sectors of society, I'm talking about millions of people, from business people to middle class, just gonna wanna go to US, study in university, etc. So more and more with this increasing aggressiveness of US against both Russia and China, what is happening to this sector of society? Some of them just have to shut up because, I mean, you can't support a country who is like bashing your country every single day, demonizing your nationalities, demonizing your culture. So that's the first thing. And I think this is clearly happening in both. I mean, this both China and Russia, I mean, internally, they are getting more united. It's the same as the global south, I'll tell you about the countries. This is also happening internally in China and Russia right now. And the nationalist sectors, the patriotic sectors, patriotic, I think, would be the best word in English. They were just, guys, look, this is what US is about. You guys love US, but I'm sorry, they don't love you. So I think this is happening. And finally, I think a big mistake of the United States and NATO right now, and this is not Marco saying, this is Henry Kissinger saying, guys, you guys are crazy. You guys are unifying the United States and China. I'm sorry, Kissinger, I worked hard, guys, 50 years ago to put an edge between Russia and China, to divide them. That's why I went to Beijing. That's why we brought China together and we divided China and Russia, Soviet Union at the time. And you guys crazy now, you guys are uniting them. I'm sorry, this is suicide. But the problem again, I was saying, I mean, this is, again, it's common sense, right? This is like strategic common sense. But again, guys like Blinken, Victoria Nuland, I mean, I think they are very behind common sense right now and in strategic thinking. Because what they're doing now in 5 years from now, I mean, you saw what she told Putin. So this is a shift in history that we haven't seen in 100 years, and we are driving this transformation. I mean, this was imaginable to happen 3 years ago, 4 years ago. But this is what U.S. has been producing.
Marco, do me a favor. Stay there because we're going to come back in just a little bit. There's a couple of things I want you to go over with us, okay? By the way, I should mention to you, I have a podcast where as a journalist, as a Latino, as an entrepreneur, I tell my story and share with you what I've learned about how to succeed, how to grow, and some of the things we talk about here on this particular show. It's called the Rick Sanchez Podcast. Check it out, and I'll see you there. Okay, when we come back, more on the growing tension between China and the United States, and specifically what China has to gain. Stay right there.
We'll be right back. Эстонии вернулись на родину победителями. Вместе с ними возвращалась жизнь.
The Bronze Soldier Monument was erected in 1947 in the Estonian capital by the Soviet authorities. Originally built above a burial site of troops' remains, it's a memorial to the soldiers who gave their lives in World War II.
Это была советская традиция. В городах устанавливали памятники советским воинам, погибшим в Великой Отечественной войне.
In 2007, the Estonian government decided to relocate the monument from the city center.
Это уже было спланировано правительством провокация против памяти о тех воинах, которые освобождали Эстонию от фашизма.
The move divided the population. Estonia's large Russian-speaking community strongly opposed it, and intense rioting broke out in Tallinn. These have since become known as the Bronze Night Riots.
Люди принесли цветы и просто стояли. Они ничего не делали.
Бьют народ, просто крутят, не жалея никого.
Мы жили очень спокойно в Эстонии, а теперь я считаю, что это правительство доводит до такого состояния.
Accused Trump of being engaged with various foreign corruption scams, and now it's coming out that the Biden family was taking money from almost anybody around the world to line their pockets. The Democrats accused Trump of various sexual misconduct. There's all kinds of allegations circulating Biden concerning that and concerning far worse misconduct. So I think what you see is a lot of confession through projection. What they accuse Trump of is what they themselves are guilty of.
Hey, welcome back. I'm Rick Sanchez. There's a new target in the war of words and deeds between China and the United States, beyond the military exercises along the Taiwan Straits, the arrest of the daughter of the founder of Huawei, the spy balloon episode, and the dicey, heated rhetoric between these two countries. Enter the TikTok war. The U.S. Congress wants to ban TikTok, calling the social media site where followers share videos a danger to America. And President Biden seems to agree. TikTok CEO Xu has come out fighting. The first thing he did, even before meeting with Congress, was he put out this video to all his TikTok followers in the United States.
Hi, everyone. It's Xu here. I'm the CEO of TikTok. I'm here in Washington, D.C. today, and I have some news and updates to share with everyone here. Today, I'm super excited to announce that more than 150 million Americans are on TikTok. That's almost half of the US coming to TikTok to connect, to create, to share, to learn, or just to have some fun. This includes 5 million businesses that use TikTok to reach their customers. And the majority of these are small and medium businesses. Now, these numbers are amazing. And I'm so thankful to all of you and the 7,000 TikTok employees in the US who are helping us build this incredible community in America and around the world. Now, this comes at a pivotal moment for us. Some politicians have started talking about banning TikTok. Now, this could take TikTok away from all 150 million of you. I'll be testifying before Congress later this week to share all that we're doing to protect Americans using the app and deliver on our mission to inspire creativity and to bring joy. Let me know in the comments what you want your elected representatives to know about what you love about TikTok.
Joining us once again is Marco Fernandez to talk about this situation, this TikTok thing, this new thing. Congress is considering a ban on TikTok. It's one of the largest social media platforms in the world, as you know. They think, in fact, they've said repeatedly that it is a Chinese spy tool. Is it? What do you make of that?
Well, first of all, I think it's important to remind that the Chinese companies, ByteDance, they already agreed with the U.S. government to be to have like a strong U.S. Supervision overview about the data thing. They agree, okay, we can store our data in the cloud. You guys tell us to do. You guys have access. You guys can control that. And they say no. You have to sell the company. So, I mean, it's clear what's going on. They just want to steal the company, to grab the company from the Chinese, because it's a very successful company. I mean, this, I'm sorry, I'm a big Godfather fan. For me, I just remember, I mean, we're going to make an offer you can't refuse. This is mafia. This is mafia behavior, right? You say, no, this is our conditions, is our way or the highway. So this is, for me, is clear. But I think, of course, the issue of the data, it's a very complex thing. And get you the words, because I think you have more questions about it.
By the way, what do you think really is bringing this on?
Campaign, anti-China propaganda, anti-China paranoia. But this is, again, I think it's a commercial issue. They just want to take advantage and grab the very successful company. Which, by the way, it's funny because you know that TikTok doesn't make money in US at all. Actually loses a lot of money in US. Where they really make money is in China. And why? Because the way TikTok makes money is not because, I mean, you and me like spend, I don't know, Rick, 20 minutes a day just looking to like nice dance videos. And no, that's not how they make money. They make money because in China, they sell stuff. This is a huge platform already competing with Alibaba, with JD. People just sell stuff, do live streams as we're doing right now, but we're just selling ideas or we're just exchanging ideas. They sell potatoes. I mean, peasants, Chinese peasants selling potatoes or getting potatoes to people in the big city close by. So this is how we make money. And why is this possible in China and not in US? Because China has a huge logistical infrastructure right now. It's crazy. Sometimes I get scared. Like a friend of mine was like, just moved. And then he said, oh, I want a TV. It was like Saturday, 1 a.m. They go to like online platform. He buys a television in 1 hour, like 2 a.m. in the morning. And Saturday, he got the TV. This is a crazy logistic infrastructure China has. U.S. doesn't have. They don't know how to do it. This is going to be a problem for them. Even if they grab TikTok, let's see how they will make money, because TikTok is losing a lot of money in the U.S. right now.
One of the problems, I think, with these accusations is that I detect a bit of hypocrisy here on the part of our government, given that, you know, we often, or at least our politicians and our media, often condemns countries for blocking social media, for not giving free access to media, for not allowing citizens to express themselves, proclaiming, as we often do, these countries aren't like us, they don't respect free speech. Is that kind of hypocritical?
Yeah, Rick, I mean, there's a lot of hypocrisy for one side, because we know that the fact that you, me, and our audience, all of us are on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, WhatsApp, means State Department has all of our data. They know us better than ourselves. They know our desires. They know what we like, we don't like, what we buy, what we don't buy. And this is, data is a huge issue. Data, there's a lot of people say the data is the new oil, because this is what, I mean, this is what makes money now. These companies sell the data that they have about us. So, and US has access to everybody in the world but China. So this is, I think, is the first thing. Second thing is that I also wouldn't be naive in these issues of data, because it's not that, oh, we should just have a free market and everybody. No, this is also national security. I think China had a very clever or smart way like a few years ago when they come to the US platform and say, okay, guys, you want to be in China, this is Chinese data. We need to have control. The same thing that, I mean, ByteDance is proposing US, oh, okay, you guys can control. Here in China, they say, okay, we need to talk. We need to have access. Twitter said, no way. Google said, no way. So, okay, guys, so please, you cannot stay in our country. Of course, people here in China, everybody access these platforms with VPN, but there is this issue. So you cannot just say that data should be free and everybody should access. No, that's actually, this is a trap. This is a kind of narrative that is a trap for US, because at the end of the day, all the data goes to State Department. So I think this is a very complex issue. At the end of the day, what we should discuss is how the states, how the nations should deal with data, because it's our data, it's my data, it's your data, but it's actually captured by private companies. without any, I mean, they have no limit. So this kind of restrictions, this kind of, I mean, this kind of debates, policies that we should have been doing in the countries. China is doing this right now. There's a big debate in the country about what is the character of the data, who should control, who should not control. But unfortunately, most of our countries, we just accept that, okay, Twitter is amazing. I have Twitter, of course, but I mean, it's dangerous because this is a way also of US to have access to all of us.
How does China respond if they do? How do you think China will respond, maybe better put, to the blocking of this app? Will they respond?
They are saying so. They are saying so. Again, it's hard to predict. But I think, of course, China is being more and more attacked. Now it's TikTok, but there's a whole issue about the chips, the semiconductors. There's a huge war on that right now. U.S. is curbing access to China. We had a Huawei issue. So, I mean, I suspect they're going to do something. They have been saying that, but we don't know yet what they're going to do.
Marco, thanks so much. I really appreciate your time and look forward to talking to you once again. Hey, before we go, I want to remind you of our mission here. Simple, really. It's to de-silo the world. We've got to stop living in these little boxes, you know, because truths don't live in boxes. Truth is everywhere. I'm Rick Sanchez. I'll be looking for you again right here, where I hope to provide some direct impact.